This is Radioactive, a weekly grassroots environmental and social justice news journal for January 10th, 2013. This is Meredith DeFrancesco. Today we look at what LePage Medicaid cuts were and were not approved by the federal government, and we examine the next push to take bisphenol A out of the packaging for food sold in Maine. This week, the federal level Medicare and Medicaid services gave a decision on the significant Maine care cuts the LePage administration and the Republican-led Maine legislature made last session. The governor had hoped to make $20 million in cuts, but now is looking at $4 million. The cuts that have been allowed, however, still cause 15,000 low-income Mainers to lose their Maine care health insurance and over 5,000 low-income seniors and Mainers with disabilities to lose some coverage. To discuss the latest on this issue, we have with us Sarah Gagne-Holmes, the executive director of Maine Equal Justice Partners, an advocacy group for low-income Mainers. So last year, Governor LePage proposed an array of cuts to Maine's Medicaid program, MaineCare, but required approval for the federal government, which just approved some of the cuts but denied others. Sarah Gagne-Holmes, thanks for joining us on the program, and remind us what the LePage administration was requesting in these cuts and what the federal response was, what cuts were approved and what weren't.
Right. So last session, the governor proposed cuts to four different categories of individuals, and the legislature approved those cuts. It would have eliminated coverage for low-income 19 and 20-year-olds. It would have eliminated coverage for low-income working parents down to 100% of the federal poverty level. And it also would have reduced coverage for low-income seniors and people with disabilities. Now, on Monday, CMS notified the state that some of those cuts, the Center for Medicare and Medicaid Services notified the state of Maine, indicating that some of the cuts could be implemented, but others could not because of a provision of the Affordable Care Act that protects coverage until 2014. So the groups that the federal government told the LePage administration that they could not cut were the low-income 19 and 20-year-olds and the parents between 100 and 133% of the federal poverty level. Now, the two groups that the federal government indicated could be cut because the state of Maine had certified a budget deficit are working parents between 133 and 200% of the federal poverty level, as well as reducing coverage for low-income seniors and people with disabilities. This program is called the Medicare Savings Program, and individuals on it are very low income who require assistance with their Medicare Part B and Part D premiums, coinsurance, and deductibles.
And around how many people are we looking at who will be taken off that help?
So 15,192 individuals will lose all coverage, and approximately 5,650 low-income seniors and people with disabilities will lose some. So the total number of working parents that will lose coverage between 133 and 200 is 12,592. And total number of low-income seniors and people with disabilities who will lose all coverage is the 2,600, with the remaining number being those seniors and people with disabilities who will lose some coverage.
But again, you said that the law does not allow some 6,500 19 to 20-year-olds to be cut off the rolls.
That's correct. The coverage that was protected is about 21,000 people will continue to have Maine care coverage. And that's comprised of approximately 14,500 working parents between 100 and 133 and 6,500 low-income 19 and 20-year-olds. I do want people to understand, however, that the working parents, especially those between 133 and 150, whose coverage is going to be terminated, they may be eligible, at least half of them perhaps may be eligible, for something called transitional Medicaid coverage. And I want to make sure people know that, because I'm sure this is a very frightening time for people who are facing the loss of their coverage.
And how do they go about getting that, and how much will that actually cover?
So the Department of Health and Human Services, when they send out the notice indicating that coverage will be terminated, they should also be informing people who are eligible for this transitional Medicaid assistance that they're eligible for the program. And people have to be between 133 and 150% of the federal poverty level to be eligible. And there are some details that are probably too many to go into at this point, but some people will be eligible for 4 months of coverage. Other people could be eligible for 6 to 12 months of coverage. And with any luck, that transitional coverage will really help people get to 2014, when hopefully the state of Maine will fully implement the Affordable Care Act and provide coverage for people, for all people, through the exchanges and Medicaid.
I want to talk about that aspect in a minute, but just back to the budget deficit argument that the governor had in order to get these cuts even approved. That was the argument, but there, these cuts might not continue through the fiscal year starting in July 1st. Could these cuts be rolled back?
It's a very good point. Yes, the letters that the federal government sent to the LePage administration indicated that these cuts were not effective until March 1st of 2013. And because the cuts are being allowed based solely on the fact that the state of Maine had certified a budget deficit, the cuts are only approved through the end of the state fiscal year, which is June 30th, 2013. So in order for these cuts to remain permanent, the state of Maine would have to certify a budget deficit for state fiscal year 2014, which begins July 1 of 2013.
Okay, and let's talk about the Affordable Care Act, because the thought was that some of these cuts were actually in contradiction to the Affordable Care Act, and additionally in contradiction, as you alluded, is while states may be looking to cut Medicaid, like Maine, and Maine has the argument that Maine, or the LePage administration has an argument that Maine is more generous, that in fact in 2014 nationally Medicaid will be expanding in order to provide a more universal coverage. Well, certainly not universal health care coverage, but a more universal coverage. Can you talk about that?
Yes. The Affordable Care Act has a provision in it that allows states, well, sets aside federal dollars that have already been allocated for coverage come January 1st, 2014. And it would allow states to get, for all newly eligible individuals in their states, it would allow for 100% federal dollars paying for coverage for the first 3 years. And slowly that would get ratcheted back so that by 2020, the state would be getting 90% federal match. So it's really a great bargain for the state of Maine to cover more of our uninsured so that we can have a healthier and more productive workforce and better health outcomes for the state as a whole if we do decide to get coverage. If the state of Maine decides to accept those federal dollars, we could cover individuals up to 138% of the federal poverty level. And right now, you know, there are certain categories of coverage. You have to fit into a category in order to be covered. It's not just based on healthcare need. And there are many individuals who are not eligible because they don't have children, who are very sick but have no access to coverage.
What is your take on how far the Affordable Care Act goes to provide the type of health care that we need in this country and in the state?
I think the Affordable Care Act tries to provide a more streamlined approach to covering individuals, and they take away the very arbitrary decision that was made back in the 60s to only provide coverage for adults who have children living at home. With the Affordable Care Act, not only with the Medicaid expansion, but with the creation of state exchanges, or if the state chooses not to adopt a state exchange, a federally facilitated exchange, which is what Maine will likely have, it'll be streamlined application process for insurance coverage. There'll be one place a person can go where there will be different insurance plans compared apples to apples, so you know exactly what you're purchasing and how much it will cost. And it will also provide subsidies through tax credits for individuals between 100% of the poverty level and 400% of the poverty level. That, in addition to Medicaid expansion, you're looking at trying to create a level playing field so that folks don't find themselves on a cliff once they hit a certain dollar amount. They're no longer eligible for Medicaid, but yet they don't earn enough to afford private coverage. That's the system we currently have. And that's a system that causes a lot of causes lack of continuity of coverage for people, because as long as they're eligible for health care through Medicaid, for instance, then they're treating their conditions and they're having good health outcomes. But as soon as they earn too much, but not enough yet to buy on the private market, then all of a sudden they stop taking care of the necessary conditions that they have because of the lack of ability to afford it. With the Affordable Care Act, that cliff will be taken away, because most people above 400% of the federal poverty level have the necessary income to purchase coverage even without subsidies.
We just have about a minute left. Could you again react to the decision, the federal government decision on the proposed cuts by Governor LePage to the Medicaid programs, what your organization's position on that is, and your concerns for those who it affects?
We are very concerned about the cuts for both the parents and the low-income seniors and people with disabilities. We believe that the LePage administration has pursued policy choices that have led to the budget deficit, and then they use that deficit to justify cuts that will hurt the health and security of thousands of people. And you know, we are seeking clarification from the federal government, especially with regard to the low-income seniors and people with disabilities who have lost coverage, because we did believe that they would be covered, while the parents, again, we believe that the deficit was created, but according to the Affordable Care Act, there really is not a legal argument we can make that coverage should have been extended for them. So we will continue to work for access to health care coverage, and we're very supportive of accepting those federal dollars and expanding coverage to individuals who are below 138%. And we welcome anybody who's interested in working with us to do that.
Well, Sarah Gagne-Holmes with Maine Equal Justice Partners, we thank you for speaking with us today, and we hope to keep up with you on these issues in the future.
I look forward to it. Thank you very much.
Again, you are listening to Radioactive, a weekly grassroots environmental and social justice news journal on WERU Community Radio. We turn now to the plastic additive bisphenol A, or BPA. Over the past few years, a movement has been growing to remove the toxic chemical from reusable food containers and now packaging for food marketed to babies and toddlers. Governor LePage intensified the pushback against this health initiative, famously saying the only harmful thing he believed BPA initiated is that, quote, some women might grow little beards, end quote. This summer, a citizen initiative signed by 900 Mainers was presented to the Maine Board of Environmental Protection, or BEP, who is required to rule whether bisphenol A should be taken out of baby and toddler food packaging sold in Maine. Last week, the LePage administration issued a memo urging the Board of Environmental Protection to deny the ban. The BEP is scheduled to make a decision this month. Yesterday, activists, including mothers and children, protested at the governor's office. Today, we spoke with Emma Hollis O'Connor, a grassroots organizer with the Environmental Health Strategy Center, an organization which has spearheaded chemical action in Maine. So yesterday, there was a protest at the governor's office in response to a memo that his administration's Department of Environmental Protection issued concerning the June 2012 citizen petition. The DEP advised that the Board of Environmental Protection reject the BPA ban in baby and toddler food packaging. So we want to have you talk about this memo, where the process is right now in the Board of Environmental Protection's consideration of the citizen petition. So although the DEP has made this recommendation, the BEP is not required to follow that.
Right.
And so let's talk about some of these issues, and I'll give the floor over to you.
Sure. Yeah, so you're absolutely right. You know, last week, the LePage administration's Department of Environmental Protection issued this formal recommendation to the Board of Environmental Protection, basically recommending that they reject that proposal. to get BPA out of baby food packaging and toddler food packaging. They did recommend that the board approve a ban on BPA in infant formula packaging, but we would like to note that the FDA has already banned BPA in infant formula packaging, and all infant formula makers have already voluntarily gotten it out of their products. So,
in fact, the voluntary compliance came first, and then the U.S.
Right.
Food and Drug Administration already put this ban into play in July of 2012. Is that right?
That's right. Yeah. So you're exactly right at the sequence there. So the FDA acted only when manufacturers had already gotten it out of their products, and so the recommendation from the LePage administration to the BEP was pretty much to just do nothing, to not, you know, add any new protections for babies and toddlers. So what's at stake right now is Maine's Board of Environmental Protection, which is an independent board, has a decision before them whether or not to approve this rule to get BPA out of baby and toddler food packaging. And they really only have to prove two things in order to be able to do this under Maine law. It's already been decided by the state of Maine that BPA is harmful to children. So we've already named BPA as a priority chemical under the Kids Safe Products Act. That happened 2 years ago. And then just last year, a sales ban went into effect on BPA in reusable containers following the BEP's recommendation.
And all reusable containers, or we're just talking about ones that were explicitly used by babies and toddlers, bottles, sippy cups, or is
pretty much all reusable containers. Mm-hmm. So baby bottles, sippy cups, and then things like your Nalgene water bottle or a plastic Tupperware would count as well. So that was a really great victory. So now all that the Board of Environmental Protection needs to decide is, A, that BPA is exposed to children through food packaging, through baby food packaging and toddler food packaging, and B, they need to find that there are safer and equally affordable alternatives already available on the market. And so both of those things have been found to be true. So,
and again, just to be more explicit, the BPA, which again we're saying bisphenol A, which is a plastic chemical additive added to plastic, we find that in baby and toddler food packaging on the inside of cans and in the inside of jar lids. Is that right?
Yep. So BPA has been found both in the linings of metal lids of glass jars that are used for baby food, and then also in the linings of metal aluminum cans that are used for all food, really, but this particular rule focusing on toddler food. So, yeah, we already know that these products are made with BPA, that BPA is intentionally added. And then, you know, the Board of Environmental Protection has before them pretty overwhelmingly clear scientific evidence showing that the vast majority of baby and toddler foods that were tested for BPA, so this is the food inside the packaging, had levels of BPA. So we know that the BPA gets from the packaging into the food and therefore is exposed to kids.
And can you talk, in the presentation of the citizen petition to the Board of Environmental Protection, there was a lot of scientific presentation. Can you talk a little bit more about that, not only that you did find that the BPA leaches into the food, but remind listeners again about what sort of health concerns there are?
Sure. So in terms of baby food, there were kind of two major pieces of evidence that were before the Board of Environmental Protection. One was actually a study that was independently commissioned by the Department of Environmental Protection. It was a Canadian study, it was a study that they cited in their memo last week. It was a Canadian study, and it found that 81% of all baby food jars tested had the presence of BPA inside. And then last year, we also did our own testing. So we used an independent lab. We sent a bunch of major baby food brands to be tested, four different major brands, and almost all of the baby food that we tested, I think all but just one one type of baby food had BPA right in the food. And then there's been testing done on toddler foods as well, on aluminum canned foods. There's a study done at Harvard University about 2 years ago now that tested Campbell's soup. So it had a bunch of participants eating Campbell's soup every day and then testing their levels of BPA in their bodies. And it was really remarkable. The people who had soup with BPA in it had something like over 1,000% increase of BPA in their bodies. So that's pretty remarkable. And the reason why we care about BPA being in our bodies is because it's a hormone-disrupting chemical. We know that now that a lot of scientific studies have been done on lab animals showing that this chemical mimics the hormone estrogen. BPA was actually originally almost selected to be an estrogen-mimicking chemical back in the 1930s. There's pretty clear evidence that that's what the chemical is designed to do. And so the reason why it's a problem to have a hormone-disrupting chemical introduced to our bodies, especially when we're young and in rapid stages of development, is that a hormone introduced really even at a tiny level can lead to real health problems later on in life, such as various types of cancer. It's been linked to breast cancer, prostate cancer. BPA has been linked to early puberty in girls, also to various learning disabilities and behavioral problems. So it's a pretty serious, nasty chemical, even at tiny, tiny doses.
Brain development being part of that as well.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. And even some links to obesity.
Yeah, there's even emerging evidence that there's links to obesity, that early exposure to BPA can lead to obesity later on in life and also diabetes.
So let's talk about, for some time, the LePage administration, in fact, when they first came into office, have been basically gunning for the BPA restrictions, putting that right out there in LD1 back at the top of the administration, that they wanted to get rid of the work that had been done so far to limit BPA in child products in Maine. Maine has been a leader with its citizen organizing in phasing this chemical additive out of food. Can you talk about this history and then putting this memo into context and how much power you think this memo will have, the memo and the sentiment have over the BEP's, the Board of Environmental Protection's decision?
Sure. So right when Governor LePage took office, as you said, one of his first actions he took was to try to basically dismantle Maine's Kid Safe Products Act and also undo the work that had been done to designate BPA as a chemical that should be taken out of reusable food and beverage containers. And that elicited an enormous response from moms, teachers, health professionals all over the state who, you know, stood up to protect those really important laws in the state of Maine. And actually, you know, all of that reaction was very successful. Not only did we end up getting that ban on BPA in reusable containers, but we also protected the Kid Safe Products Act from any harm and actually even improved the law under the LePage administration. So that kind of shows how much unified support there is, and it's really bipartisan support in the legislature. So the memo that the LePage administration issued last week was, you know, very consistent with the way that they've been handling this whole idea of toxic chemicals exposed to kids, just kind of ignoring the science and saying, let's not take any action, let's delay action. This whole time, you know, the LePage administration has been mimicking arguments that the chemical industry makes when the chemical industry is trying to argue for a delayed action. And actually, much of the language back in LD1 2 years ago was just pulled right out of chemical industry language. So this memo that's now been presented to the BEP last week, we're hoping it won't have an impact. The memo just completely flies in the face of overwhelming scientific evidence that's been presented to the BEP. Actually, in the memo, there's a a reference to the study that shows that an overwhelming percentage of baby food jars that contain BPA leach BPA right into the food. So, you know, they kind of contradicted themselves there in their own memo. And so, you know, there's not a lot we can do at this point to influence the board, but we just hope that the KidSafe Products Act, as it was intended, is working, that, you know, our board members are acting on the science, are acting on the evidence that they have, that there are already safer alternatives available, and, you know, we're going to wait for their decision. And I think if the BEP decides to not adopt the rule to get BPA out of baby and toddler food packaging, then we'll be really disappointed, because we'll know that they haven't acted on the science, they've acted on politics.
And there already has been a public hearing, is that right? And then the next meeting, the next Board of Environmental Protection meeting, will be a discussion?
Yeah, so there's already been a public hearing that happened in September, and then there was a public comment period during which, you know, scientists, doctors, all kinds of people, hundreds of parents submitted public comments for consideration. Then the public comment period closed, and now there's just been this series of public meetings. So the public can no longer really make a comment to influence the decision, but the public can go and watch and make their presence known. So the last of those meetings happened 2 weeks ago, and then, you know, we know that next week there's going to be this really major, important meeting happening on Thursday, the 17th, where the BEP is essentially going to make their decision. So we're inviting people to go to that meeting. We think it's important for them to remember that there's lots of people hanging on this decision. And so that meeting starts at 9 a.m. in the Civic Center. We're gathering folks just half an hour before, and we'll be filling those seats and watching to see what they say. And then the final vote will take place the week after, on Thursday, the 24th.
So, and then whenever decision is made, however, still needs to be approved by the Maine legislature?
Yes. So if they approve the rule, if the BEP adopts that rule, then it goes to the Maine legislature for final approval. And then if passed by the legislature, it goes into law.
And just to clarify, we're talking about, again, this particular citizen's petition and law that people are seeking has to do with toddler and baby food packaging. And can you just clarify in this particular case how we're differentiating between toddler and adult food?
It really has to do with how the product is marketed. So we're saying a toddler food is a food that is clearly, obviously marketed to kids under the age of 3. And if you go to the store and look at some of the canned foods that are on the shelves, you'll see what we mean. You know, you'll find Dora the Explorer or other favorite kids' cartoons advertising the product. So right now it's kind of defined on how it's marketed. But there's a loophole in the KidSafe Products Act right now that makes foods for kids above the age of 3 exempt from any kind of regulation. So we would like to actually go back and fix that so that we can address BPA in all food. All food should be BPA free.
Because obviously children eat what the parents eat.
Absolutely, yeah. And we also know that what parents eat, you know, what a woman eats when she's pregnant also, you know, will pollute her unborn baby. We know that chemicals that adults consume end up in breast milk. So it's all linked together. We should be making sure that all of our food is safe.
Well, thanks for joining us, Emma Hollis O'Connor with the Environmental Health Strategy Center.
Great. Thank you so much for having me.
There is a reason that you're here. There is a reason that you're not.
We end with the music of Sorcha, who will debut her new band, The Clearing, at One Longfellow Square tonight in Portland. You've been listening to Radioactive on WERU Community Radio.
Strong, and because it moves you.